Welcome to the Florida Madcaps, your ultimate guide to experiencing fantastic and unique destinations across our magnificent state. Join us while we lead you on a journey of exploration, recreation, and conservation. The popularity of Florida's natural wonders is on the rise, and our mission is to be your go-to source for conscientious recreation. We encourage you to get out and explore these breathtaking sites, and to leave them even better than you found them, through individual actions and group advocacy. Join the Florida Madcaps as we discover the beauty of our incredible state together.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Florida Madcaps podcast. It's me, Ryan, aka the Florida Excursionist, and I'm here with the Florida famous Sunshine State Seekers.
Hello.
Good day.
Look at that enthusiasm, just brimming with it after a long hike that we had today. So
it was lovely. Good.
Yeah.
The old Payne's Prairie.
Mm-hmm. Wild horses,
some
bison.
Payne's Prairie in my legs right now.
We finally saw some bison, though. We did look through the telescope, and there it was.
Finally saw some.
I was happy to see the swallowtail kite.
It's a nice day.
So today we have a nice long list, but before we get started on that, just want to encourage everyone to go to our partner's website, which is the Florida Springs Council. It's www.floridaspringscouncil.org/madcaps. You sign up and they'll send you a free sticker.
Do it.
Yeah, listen to Chelsea. And she means business. So today we're talking about some coastal area parks in Northeast Florida. We have in other areas of interest. We have quite a long list. So we're going to kick it off with Fernandina Plaza, probably one of the smallest state parks that's out there. I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying the ones we've both visited a lot.
It's a very small state park, but it's also very cool, not only for its history, but for the things immediately surrounding it.
Such as?
The Pippi Longstocking House, which pretty much ruined my youth because I'm a redheaded girl and everyone called me Pippi my entire childhood. But I loved Pippi Longstockings.
Oh, that's good. So if there was any vandalism to the house, we'd know who to.
It wasn't me. The house is beautiful.
It is quite iconic. I mean, before I knew it was there and you look at it, it stands out. Mm-hmm. Like it definitely does. But Fernandina Plaza is in like Old Town Fernandina. Which is like the original center of town. When the railroads came through, they basically downtown diverted to around where the railroad was. Where the Fernandina Plaza now exists is kind of like looks like a very quiet residential area known as Old
it's
Town.
Like the extended front yard of whoever owns that house.
The park itself has grass and a replica of a cannon.
Yes, a cement cannon.
Is that what it is, a cement cannon?
But some very nice views as well.
Yes.
And history, of course.
As you had stated, a wonderful place for watching the sunset.
Yes. The neat thing, and you heard it here first, all the snowbirds and tourists in Fernandina, they don't know about that spot. So you can get some solitude if you're an introvert like myself. And is that right there near the St. Mary's River? Is that the one that separates it from Georgia?
That's the river that separates it, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's, I got to look at a map again. But
like, I'll just take your word for that.
Yeah, I know it's pretty close to Georgia. But interestingly enough, since that was like the original part of the town, they did build a walkway to the site of Fort Clinch, which is a state park.
Yes.
It's the Amelia River, actually. That goes past the Fernandina Plaza, and then actually circles it. It meets the St. Mary's River there where it goes past Fort Clinch.
Is it pretty close to Georgia? I mean, is the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of empties right there and merges and then kind of comes around this little peninsula where Fort Clinch is located at the very end there.
Yeah. The ambience would be just perfect if it wasn't for like some massive paper mill or some kind of industrial thing that's sitting right there between the park and the downtown.
Couldn't we see that from Fort Clinch?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like kind of like enjoying the views of the paper mill.
On the one side, it's you get this kind of intracoastal lazy river type thing going on, but you also has like factories kind of like smoke coming from them.
Yeah. Lots of big, freight boats. I don't know what they're called. Big boats with stuff on them.
Cargo ships.
Cargo ships. There's the word.
I mean, it's an important port.
But yeah, Fort Clinch. So some interesting history there, right? We were talking about that. We discovered that it was it one of the original eight state parks, or was it close to it?
I believe so.
Yeah.
It was 1935 that it was acquired, and then 1938 open to the public or something like that.
Yeah, that's the Goldhead was early on. One of the original eights, and that was near the time frame that it opened. So there was the United States had a problem with coastal defenses. So they wanted to build these nice, sleek forts. They start building it to protect the waterways and defend the coastline there. It fell into Confederate hands during the Civil War. And then, unfortunately, due to the development of the rifling cannon, I think Union forces just collapsed the walls of Fort Pulaski. I believe that's up around like Georgia, in a matter of hours when it used to be not possible at all. So masonry forts, like most of the ones that we know in Florida, became obsolete like overnight. Mm-hmm. And if you're at Fort Clinch, you can see like the foundation of some buildings that they started to build and was like, never mind, drop their bricks. And then, so they said, this is no longer, you know, an effective means of defense. So that was it.
They had it for a year. And they were like, oh, never mind, and left. And then it went to the Union.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful fort. We've taken tours of it twice now, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. They do reenactments there.
Yeah, and kind of funny, we did a little boat tour of Cumberland Island, which is not in Florida. But
Whoa.
Right across the waterway. You can see it from there. And the tour guide was he was very humorous and said, they've never seen any battles there, so I'm not quite sure what they're reenacting. But they do reenactments just the same. The first day we did a tour on it, I believe it was the first time we did the tour on it, it was super foggy out.
Oh, yeah.
Very eerie. We were camping there, so we got up first thing. We were probably the first people in the fort.
Like right when it opened. Yeah. I think it's even possible that they had kind of opened the fort before they even opened the park itself, because mm-hmm.
There was nobody there. It was wild. Just us.
Yeah, did you see any ghosts?
No, it's too foggy.
But it was very foggy, and the ambiance was pretty wild.
Can't see ghosts through the fog, you know? They blend right in.
Yeah. I thought that's why they get up right up on you and surprise you, you know?
But there are some, much like other forts that you go and visit, there's all these caves, not caves, but like fort caves, I don't know, tunnels, I guess.
Tunnels, there we go.
Tunnels when they're
tunnels when they're fort by you.
I have a way with... words. But you just go down these dark paths that end in, you know, dead ends or turn into a cellar or different rooms used for different purposes for storing ammunition and food and all kinds of different stuff. There was this fort typically when we've gone has the reenactors there.
I was gonna say
a cast, but there, someone, I don't know what the gentleman's name is that's there. He's in one of the rooms kind of like doing the log of things that happen every day. And there's bunk beds, so all kinds of stuff they still have there.
The little prison they had there, too.
Yeah, they have a prison.
They mess with the kids. We took the kids to do the fort, and they're like, oh, you want to go in the prison? No, no, thanks. But you can climb up, kind of like Fort Pickens as well. A lot of these mm-hmm. older ones, they really, it's incredible that they allow you to have so much access to these really old historical artifacts, in a sense. And the views that you get from the top of Fort Clinch are crazy, because you can look out across the water and stuff. But mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. You know, that's I think that is the biggest the highlight of the park, but also has, have you guys camped there? I know it has a beach. I've been to the beach. I have not camped there. Have you guys camped there?
So there are two camping areas. We have not really even explored the Atlantic side. There's some RV little section. And I heard from a friend of ours.
Yeah, a friend of ours said, don't bother.
Said it was like a sandbox. There's a couple of tent camping little pieces that are like set in the sand. We were on the western side of the island, I guess, which would be by that river that kind of goes up and around the peninsula. And that was a really nice campsite, actually. I enjoyed it, and it was nice to walk around there.
Did we camp there once or just one time?
We only camped there once, yeah.
I remember. But yeah, so it was a really pretty campsite. We did a little beach stroll at night in the moonlight. That was wonderful. Is that one of the ones we did on New Year's?
I don't think so.
I can't remember. Sometimes I get these things mixed up, so bear with me. I mean, too many parks, too many memories.
Hundreds of visits to different trails, parks, and natural areas, and you can't keep them straight.
We've camped at a few places.
Yeah. So yeah, that it's an interesting park. There's a lot to see there, a lot of history, and a lot of natural features that are very interesting. Now you go just south of there to Amelia Island from Fernandina, and also I'd like to note that Fernandina used to be like an old fishing town, and they've made it into a very quaint downtown that's getting an increasing draw of visitors. So if you want a nice place that's a little bit less crowded than St. Augustine, it's nice to visit. But when I go there now and then, I see there's larger and larger crowds each time. And also, if you really look at early Florida history, and I don't think we have time to really go into it, but there was a lot of shenanigans going on there where they, what do they call it, the seven flags that have flown over because it's been taken over by, you know, pirates.
There's a building there that has one of each of the flags that has at some point in time ruled the area.
Different,
I guess.
Entities claimed sovereignty or whatnot.
Yeah, we're not just talking like, you know, foreign governments. We're just talking, you know, a lot of tomfoolery, you know, just coming through and like, hey, this is ours now.
I'd say reminiscent of the Conch Republic, which
was a little similar.
Lasted very long.
Kind of like that.
And that's down in the Keys.
Yeah. Very cute little town.
Yeah.
Fun to explore. And it's not necessarily easy to get to either, so.
Yeah.
As far as like it's in the far northeastern corner past Jacksonville and stuff. So I think that adds to its quiet quaintness.
Yes. If you go a little bit south to Amelia Island, which is, you know, kind of like a resort area, they do have American Beach. Now, American Beach is not, if you go there today, it's not a major destination. It does have historic significance. What it was is it was during the time of segregation. It was a, if I'm not mistaken, a privately owned African-American beach that had like, you know, nightclubs and everything else there and a lot of history. And then when the end of segregation, it kind of faded. I believe that's almost all privately owned. There may be one or two publicly owned buildings. And it has the tallest sand dune named Nana. It's like 60 feet tall. I get these sand dunes mixed up because, what is it, in Jonathan Dickinson State Park, they have this big giant one that has a platform on it. The ancient dune, I don't know. Maybe it's an ancient dune. It's a
very
different
beautiful
classification. But you cannot climb on Nana. That's a no-no. But it is, there's a little bit of sign on A1A when you're going through Amelia Island. You can just, you know, it takes a minute off of A1A. You can check it out and enjoy that historic significance. Now, if we go a little bit further down, there's Big Talbot, Little Talbot, and Amelia Island State Park.
Now, Amelia Island's interesting, very pretty, and also noted that it's one of the only state parks beaches that you can drive on, which we took the Jeep out. I would not recommend going on there without a four-wheel drive vehicle.
I do recall that you would have definitely wanted a four-wheel drive because it's a very sandy little road that kind of comes off the main. I'm not sure if it's A1A there, but you kind of go out and around onto the beach.
Now, for those familiar with certain beaches in Florida that you can drive on, like New Smyrna, Daytona, that's hard-packed sand, even there, sometimes people get stuck. This is a lot softer. I wouldn't, like I said, I wouldn't do it if you didn't have four-wheel drive.
Yes. And basically, Amelia Island, Big Talbot, and Little Talbot are adjacent to each other, separated by waterways. Nassau Sound separates Big Talbot and Little Talbot. And I'm not sure the name, I can't remember the name of the creek that separates Little Talbot and Big Talbot. But we can go to next. And I'm sure we mentioned in some other podcasts because I love talking about it. Big Talbot Island, my favorite beach in Florida. Now, I know a lot of people will be like, But after visiting dozens of barrier island beaches, this one is just absolutely amazing. There's not a lot of, I don't think there's any swimming there. You can do at least, I see some fishing, a lot of model shoots.
Yes.
And some hiking. I love hiking it.
Yeah, I think you're technically not allowed to swim there. But that's got the Boneyard Beach, right?
Yeah. So there's this really high bluff that separates that you, where there's the beach, and it's a very steep bluff. And you can't miss it because there's no grass or anything growing on it because it's like under a constant state of erosion. Some of your older oaks and large trees will fall, your hardwoods. They crash on the beach. They lose all their leaves and their bark's stripped. And it's just these massive entanglements of beech wood, which are perfect for your model, wedding, engagement, baby shoots. Because if I'm hiking it on like a popular day, I'm constantly trying to make sure I'm staying out of, you know, the camera person's way.
They also, you're not like me in the background, like making faces, getting glared at.
I've had some surprises. Some of them were risque. You know, I like look over my shoulder and I'm like, good golly. They have Black Rock Beach, what they call. It's not as well known, but there's this really sandy, I'm not a geologist, but it's like these rocks that kind of, I think it's really compact mud. You can go out there and walk on it. It's pretty cool. Definitely want to do all this during low tide. If you're there during high tide, a lot of times the water will pin you up against the bluffs and you're going to get your feet wet.
Now, when we went there, we did some trails with the kids, correct?
Yeah, I think we definitely, when we camped, so we camped at Little Talbot Island.
Okay,
and explored Talbot, the yes. area for a bit. And we had been there previously when you and I had camped at Fort Clinch and explored that Boneyard Beach. And we had to bring the kids down there to check it out. They weren't quite as impressed. I mean, it's really cool. A bunch of tree, like they're skeletons like, there's
sticks
on the beach.
In the ground. Like, oh, cool, Mom.
Yeah, neat. But there is, it's a short trail to get down. And like Ryan was saying, it's a bluff that, because of the erosion, just drops off. Get down this little trail and it just drops right off of this bluff onto the beach. And I imagine you wouldn't want to be there during high tide because of that. But.
Yeah, there's a couple ways to access it. Because there's like a bike path, a paved bike path that runs the length of it. From that, there are two trails that are, one's a parking area, and the other one's a trail that run out to the beach, one on the north end and one on the south end. On the extreme north end is a boat ramp where you can park there and then walk to the very northern edge of Big Talbot. So there's a couple of different ways to get on the beach itself. Also, at the by the boat ramp across A1A from it, because you're going to have to cross A1A, there's like this tidal pool that's the bird watchers go. There's so many different types of birds that are there. It's interesting to see all the activity.
Part of what makes this coastline really unique is the number of rivers that deposit and estuaries and stuff that just come right out on the coast up there.
Yeah. You have a very important estuary there, and it's in a marsh, massive marsh. And so as the tide comes in and out, all that water is constantly moving as well. And those are very important for even some of your fish that are out, you know, off the coast. When the fish are young, that's where they start. And then they head out normally, you know, depending on the fish. But so it has a very important ecological value as well. The hurricanes and major storms drastically change the environment there. The beach will look very different after a major storm.
I feel like that's like a kind of a constant theme in our episodes lately. It's Florida. That's what it is. We have hurricanes, and unfortunately, it's a natural thing. Somewhat, the increasing numbers of them. It's debatable whether how natural that is or not. But we experience them, and it's just something to always keep in mind when exploring and visiting parks and checking conditions before you go.
Yeah. And one thing you'll notice about Big Talbot, they're not going to do beach renourishment projects. So you're not going to see them truck in a bunch of sand. They just let it occur. Same way on Little Talbot Island, just to the south. When you don't build on the dunes, you don't need to renourish the beach. It just takes care of itself. If you have condos built up right up to the beach itself, then that beach needs to be renourished. But I've never seen them truck sand up to Little Talbot, despite the hurricanes and the storms and everything else. So it's very interesting. Now, Little Talbot is miles of undeveloped beach. It is just beautiful.
It is beautiful. Yeah.
It's a lot of sea turtles nest there. It's very important. It has, I think there's what, just a handful of entrances, beach access points, a couple bath houses that are back towards the parking lots. But you'll see some boardwalks emptying out into the beach and that's it. No hot dog stands, no condos, no nothing. It is absolutely beautiful.
I recall the sands being of a peculiar quality. When we took the kids there. And I imagine that has to do, again, with all the rivers mm-hmm. that deposit. And that could be part of the re-nourishment, natural re-nourishment of
the coastline over there.
The coastline over there, that there's constantly silt and stuff that's being brought out there. But the sands, I remember because early on when we were doing our stamp program with the kids, we'd go to these beaches and we're always building sandcastles and noting how the building material changed from one to the next. And
some sand was better for certain castles than others, so we would change our building styles.
That one had good sand for the type of what we were doing with it. But
yeah.
We also noticed that the water was a little more turbulent there, too, because of that.
Yeah. And if you look at, Google Earth photos of, the Talbot Islands, you can just kind of see where the currents are moving the sands. It's pretty interesting. I highly recommend doing that. Let's see. Next up, we have Pumpkin Hill Preserve. Now, actually, I went there for a master naturalist class visiting a scrub, a nice oak scrub, which I really enjoyed. It's coastal uplands next to the estuary there. And the scrub was just neat because one thing I like about a lot of scrubs, unless it's Ocala National Forest, I can usually have a nice vantage point to see all the wildlife and, everything else because it's not, this massive forest. It was really beautiful, but I believe it's 13 miles of trails and whatnot. For the area, it had a lot to see. Unfortunately, I think the city of Jacksonville recently approved maybe a permit or something of that nature to allow some development in a buffer area around it, which has the citizens up in arms. Being as it is in Florida, I'm not surprised. We're never happy with what we preserve. We just always want to keep encroaching on it. So that, unfortunately, is happening over there by Pumpkin Hill. If I remember correctly, I did read an article a couple months ago. Yellow Bluff, which is also nearby. It's near, I believe, Blunt Island Terminal, which is a major, the port area for Jacksonville. And it's an old Civil War era embankment. And there's two cannons out there. And if I had to guess, I would guess they're not cement cannons. They may have been dug up there. But it's a very small park with some dense forest and trails weaving in and out. But I do, they had a very striking oak tree where there was a little bit of erosion and the roots are kind of hanging down this little berm that was kind of neat to see. But it's a place to probably, grab a picnic spot, but it's extremely small. Close to that, we have the Mayport Ferry. Have you guys ever been on that?
Yeah, a handful of times. I would say it's one of the ones the kids really like as well, as long as you're not drinking some grape kombucha and then let out a big grapey burp in the car.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So you drive your car onto the ferry and sit on the ferry and they deposit you on the other side of the waterway. Sometimes we go, you don't have to take the ferry, correct, sir? You can drive around.
Depending on where you're heading from. So if you're coming from the south, say the Jacksonville Beach area or just kind of heading up that way, you can either go up I-95 and then cut over once you get across the river there, the St. John's River.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some folks might know about that.
It's pretty long.
That's the river actually that the Mayport Ferry crosses. But if you wanted to take a little side journey there, that's it's really fun. Actually, it's a big boat, that you basically drive your cars onto. And
now, it does have a fee. I don't remember what that is.
It wasn't much. It was definitely worth the journey. It's not like a tour boat
when
you're going across and you're like, look to your left and you're going to see dolphins.
No, it's more just for actual use.
But once everybody loads their cars on, everybody gets out of their car and you kind of chat as you're crossing the river.
Yeah.
And get to the other side. It's definitely experience I would suggest to do while you're in the area checking out those parks.
Yeah, the Mayport Ferry is operated by I'm not sure if it's like their transit authority or whoever runs, like in Jacksonville that they run the buses and whatnot. It's not a very long journey, but yeah, if you don't use it, you got to take A1A, aka Heckscher Drive in Jacksonville, up to the interstate, cross 295, and then get back on the road and then head back out to the coast. So it could save time, but it runs close to a little more than 12 hours a day. And so it's, I believe if you're a pedestrian, it's a buck, a motorcycle, it's $6, and a car is $7.
Oh, that's not bad at all. Yeah. And for the scenery, and then you're getting to see the iconic St. John's River, like right as the mouth is about to open up to the Atlantic Ocean.
And it unlocked some like childhood memories for myself. I'm from the West Coast. So up in Washington, Puget Sound area, ferry boats are very common. And going back up there and visiting when I was younger too, as well. It was very reminiscent of that. If anyone listening have done those ferry boats.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like almost like a cultural thing for Jacksonville, because I believe it's not making any money. I believe that thing loses money. And so, every time they even mention like, is this really worth it? And everybody's like, yes. So, public opinion, I think, has kept the ferry around. Because when I was a kid, they didn't have 295 or the bridge there. So that was, unless you really wanted to go down into like downtown Jacksonville, the ferry was the way to go. So it got a lot more use. But after the mid or late 1980s, the demand on it went down. But it takes you into Mayport if you're on the Fort George Island side. And there's some, great restaurants, great fishing. Jack's Beach is just a short drive away. What we didn't mention, I think this is going to be another podcast episode, is Fort George Island and Kingsley Plantation, which was once a state park. Mm-hmm. But is now a national park.
It's got an upgrade.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, among the rangers and my parents, as I mentioned before, my dad was a ranger, and there were a lot of ghost stories spoken about by the rangers that reached my ears. I didn't hear them firsthand, but I heard my parents talking about them. They gave me a chill listening to some of them. Definitely the Kingsley Plantation would take a lot longer. We can probably just do an entire episode on that.
Stay tuned for future episodes on the Kingsley Plantation.
Yeah, I think there's plenty to talk about there, because that is a lot of undeveloped coastline. Amelia Island does have a lot of resorts and stuff like that, but they've really worked hard at, when you're driving through it, it's not like Panama City Beach. Mm-mm. There's no mistake that you're in a resort area or a tourist area. They've kept a lot of the charm. So it's with that in mind, it is definitely one of the rare coasts in Florida to drive on.
Definitely quieter, and And again, touching back on Talbot Island, because we had talked about this for a second, we stayed at the state park there. That campground is really nice, and it has like a little walkway that overlooks the little marsh river area there with all the what do they call them, sedges, and all the crabs.
Yeah.
Fiddler crabs.
I always love the little crabs on the coast up there and elsewhere, but it seemed to be more prominent at that park.
It's a great place to stay the night. And then the beach is right there to swim.
Yes. They do have a good trail, the Dune Ridge Trail, which will take you along the coast and then into the ancient dune area through the forest back to the park entrance. It really has a lot of variation in elevation. Well, you're hiking along a ridge, but you just see like these massive elevation changes around the trail on the, both the left and right of it. So it's something to definitely see. And like you said, in the camping area, some of the fishing, the best fishing I did as a kid was there. You know, there's blue crabs, flounder, redfish, and lots and lots of mullet. Just don't eat the oysters. They're not good anymore. Due to our fantastic water quality, we just can't eat oysters like we used to. So,
I mean, can. You just might regret it.
You're probably going to have a lot of weight loss afterwards, I imagine.
That's a new weight loss plan I haven't thought of.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll be spending a lot of time in the restroom, I imagine. All right, so that about does it for time.
Nice way to end it.
Yeah. Maybe Ryan's just being shellfish, and he wants to eat all the oysters himself.
Yeah. Stay tuned, as we're going to discuss Florida Madcap's diet plan. The red tide diet plan. All right. Yeah, if you are in Northeast Florida and want to enjoy the coast, these are some excellent opportunities. If you want something other than major beaches with condos built right up to almost to the water's edge. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy Florida responsibly.
Thank you for listening to the Florida Madcaps. We hope today's episode was enjoyable. Your input is important to us. If there is a topic that you would like to know more about, please let us know. The Florida Madcaps is presented in partnership with the Florida Springs Council, the only nonprofit advocacy organization focused solely on protecting our Florida Springs. Get a free spring sticker and join the Florida Springs Council at floridaspringscouncil.org/madcaps. As a token of our appreciation, we are giving away a free Madcap sticker to anyone who leaves us a review. All you have to do is send us your contact information to the email provided in our show notes. We will take care of the rest. Thank you for being a part of the Florida Madcaps community.